This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Hey, welcome back to our series where we're breaking down the beliefs of Chad and Lori Daybell, or as it's easily said, Chad and Lori Daybell, WTF. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you are listening to this on podcast, or if you're on YouTube, be sure to press subscribe there, share this, and please comment. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case and your insight as to what the hell you think was going on in these two minds. Let's continue on. Chad and Lori, they had a date. Not like, let's go out for dinner date. More like end of the world date, like you do when you first get into a relationship. Hey, what do you want to do this summer? You want to go on a vacation? Nah, it's the apocalypse. We better get to Rexburg and prepare, kill our kids, exes, all that. You know, like you plan at early parts of a relationship. At least they did. The dates, July 2020. Well, they may have thought they had something going on there. I'll give them that because remember, COVID started earlier that year. They may have been like, oh shit, look, we are on it. Yeah, that was when everything would change. This was when the world, as we knew it, would come to an end. This was when the Chosen would rise from the grave, the wicked would fall, and he and Lori Vallow would step fully into their divine roles. Yeah, it wasn't a vague prediction, the kind you could reinterpret later if things didn't really pan out, or a lot of people, when it doesn't pan out, you drink a bunch of Kool-Aid and put on some Nikes and wait for the comet to come get us. I know I just intermixed two totally different suicides in mass that occurred historically. I know, they're two different ones. Jonestown and then, what was that one? I can picture it in my head. Bald guy. Heaven's Gate. There you go. Chad. He was confident. He had seen it. He claimed he had seen the visions and he knew that the countdown had begun. He knew that Casey Kasem was in the building and ready to count down the hits on American Top 40. Coming in at number 40, it's Chad Daybell with WTF. Lori, she didn't just believe it, she built her entire life around it. Because once you convince yourself that the apocalypse is only a few months away, you start making different choices about things. You start planning for a future that isn't coming. You cut ties with people who don't see what you see. You start preparing physically, spiritually, and in Chad and Lori's cases, strategically. And if someone is in your way, you don't have time to wait around for them to figure things out and get with it. This wasn't just about a general sense of the end is near. It wasn't a passive belief that someday, in the distant future, we don't know the time or date, which the Bible specifically says, Jesus Christ would return to earth. No, no, Chad's vision had told him that the apocalypse was right around the corner, and he wasn't alone in that thinking. For years, there had been growing subcultures within LDS communities that took end times prophecy much more literal than the official church did. These weren't people waiting patiently for the second coming while continuing to live their lives. These were preppers, groups of devout Mormons who believed that the righteous would soon be called to flee to a safe location before society collapsed. The idea had been floating around for decades, fueled by early LDS teachings that spoke of Zion being gathered and the faithful being led to safety. But over time, it became less about a metaphor and more about literal survivalism. You know, as marketing improved and people found better ways of selling food. Freeze-dried in large containers. Because you need to have a reason to buy the stuff, so you better scare people to get it sold. Entire online forums, books, and conferences were dedicated to the idea that the government would soon crumble. Disasters would sweep across the land. And only those who had prepared, stocked up on food, weapons, and supplies, would make it through. Chad had already written about this scenario in his novels, but now he wasn't just telling stories, he was telling people what was coming. And in Lori, he had found someone who was not only willing to believe it, but also willing to act on it. When Chad and Lori said that July 2020 was the date, they had limited time to prepare. Oh gosh, it's coming soon. What are we going to do? She took that as gospel. And that's when things started moving fast. She started seeing her life in different ways. That's expected. Why would she be looking at it as the past? The world was about to be wiped clean. And why did any of the mundane details of everyday life matter? Her marriage, irrelevant, her extended family, a distraction, her children? Well, that was the problem. Because in Lori's mind, she wasn't just preparing for the apocalypse. She was one of the leaders of the new world, and she'd be rising up after it. And that meant she couldn't afford baggage. The idea of tent cities was a major influence in their thinking. This was a belief among certain LDS individuals that when the final days arrived, the faithful would be instructed somehow, you know, mass text message or something, to gather in designated safe zones, places where they would be protected from the destruction about to unfold. People who subscribed to this idea spent thousands of dollars stockpiling tents, freeze-dried food, medical supplies, and weapons, all with the understanding that at any moment they might receive the call to leave their homes behind and retreat to these hidden camps. What about all the stuff, though, that you have at home? That's a lot of stuff to travel with. That's a lot to load up. That's more than a suitcase to take to your camp. So why do you have all the stuff at your home and your camp if you're supposed to get to another camp? Maybe they didn't think about that part. Chad and Lori weren't just aware of this belief system. They were fully on board with it. Chad told Lori that they would be among those chosen to lead the righteous into the safe places. But there was a catch. Not everyone can go, okay? There's only limited seating for this feature event, okay? It's like the SNL 50. You gotta be a cast member or no one, or be really tight to get into this seating. And that's when things got dangerous, because when you start believing that only the pure, only the spiritually chosen, only the light souls can move forward into the next phase of existence, you start looking around at people in your life and wondering, who makes the cut? And who doesn't? Lori, who had once been a devoted mother, started talking about her children as if they were obstacles. You know, the people that normally you'd be like, yeah, these people are coming with me, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Yeah, she was having second thoughts. You know, those little, they complain, they get in the way. She told people that her son JJ was difficult and that her daughter Tylee was rebellious. And as she and Chad became more extended in their apocalyptic thinking, she started speaking in a chilling new way, referring to certain people as already being gone. Not physically, of course, not yet, but in a spiritual sense. They began using the term zombies to describe people who, in their minds, were no longer truly themselves. According to Chad and Lori's twisted theology, a person could be spiritually dead, taken over by dark entities, rendered an empty shell, and if someone was a zombie, there was only one way to free them. You had to watch Thriller 5 times, click your heels together, eat a Mormon dinner properly prepared, and then you're good. Oh, wait, no. You had to kill him. Once you start thinking like that, killing someone doesn't feel like murder. It feels like a cleansing. See, it's about shifting mindsets. It's about shifting paradigms of reality to where you need them to be, so what would otherwise be horrible actions are not so horrible. They're justified, and what you're doing is right. That's the biggest thing and tenet, I think, to understand about their way of thinking, to try and reason in how they were able to justify this stuff in their minds. So in the months leading up to July 2020, the tension built. Lori cut more and more people out of their lives, dismissing family members who questioned her beliefs. When her husband Charles tried to intervene, tried to bring her back to reality, she dismissed him as a dark spirit, a man already lost, already beyond saving. And then Charles died. Shot by Lori's brother, Alex Cox. Yeah, shot. It wasn't just convenient for Lori. It was necessary for her new world order. Chad, meanwhile, had his own problem. His wife, Tammy, she was in the way of his future with Lori, their divine mission. Chad had prophesied that Tammy wouldn't be around much longer. Because if you prophesize it, doesn't make it wrong, then does it? And then suddenly, she wasn't around. By the time fall of 2019 rolled around, Lori's children, Tylee and JJ, were also missing. One by one, the people who stood in the way of Chad and Lori's end times vision started to disappear. Because once you believe the world is ending, once you convince yourself that your mission is more important than anything else, and once you declare that certain people don't belong in the new world that you're building, what is left to stop you? And why would you stop? But there was just one problem. July 2020 came. And nothing happened. There was COVID. That was going on. See, you couldn't go to Chuck E. Cheese at the moment in time, but far from the end of the world. No apocalypse, no great cleansing of the wicked, no call for the righteous to gather in tent cities. The world kept turning. And Chad suddenly found himself in the same position as so many self-declared prophets before him. Didn't see this one coming. Staring at the failed prediction with nowhere to go. He wasn't the first to make this mistake. Throughout history, LDS figures and movements and fringe movements had come and gone, each convinced that they had figured out the end times timeline, only for reality to keep marching forward. From the 1980s, there was a group in Utah led by a man named John Coyle, who predicted that catastrophic events would happen within his lifetime. He even claimed that the righteous would be called to safety in prepared places. His followers waited and waited and waited, and nothing happened. Surprise! In the 2000s, a woman named Julie Rowe gained a following by claiming that she too had visions of America's collapse. She predicted and preached about tent cities, about the coming disasters. But when her timeline started not panning out, she lost credibility. And now Chad Daybell was facing the same fate. Except for one key difference. Most of these previous prophets were just embarrassed when their doomsday dates came and went. Maybe they adjusted their predictions, maybe they lost followers, but they didn't leave a trail of bodies behind them. Chad and Lori, however, they did. And when the world didn't end, when the clock ran out, and when law enforcement finally caught up to them, they were no longer just false prophets. They were fugitives. And they had nowhere left to run. Chad Daybell didn't just think he was special. He thought he had been special for a very, very, very long time. Not just in this life, but in many lives before it. This wasn't some vague belief in eternity, the kind that most religious people hold, the idea that their soul goes on after death. No, something other than that. Chad was convinced that he had lived before, multiple times, multiple moral probations. That was the term he used, a phrase borrowed from the shadows of old, unofficial Mormon theology. It was, at its core, a version of reincarnation, something that the mainstream LDS church has long rejected, you know, because it wasn't on the tablets of gold that Joseph Smith decided to walk across the U.S. with, you know, because that sounded legit, too. And yet, for Chad and Lori, it wasn't just an interesting spiritual concept. It was fundamental and foundational to how they saw themselves in the world around them. Because if you believe in multiple lives, you start to believe that you are further along than others. That you have learned more, grown more, evolved more. I'm just better than you. You start looking at other people. You start looking at other people not as equals, but as souls who are less developed than you. And if someone isn't as spiritually advanced as you are, well, maybe they don't deserve to be here anymore. That's how dangerous this belief became. But before we get into that, let's break down what multiple moral or mortal probations actually meant in their twisted theology. The LDS Church teaches that life is a one-time event. You were created as a spirit before birth. You came to earth for a single mortal experience, and after death, you go on to the next phase of existence. Judgment, resurrection, and eventual placement. And one of the three degrees of glory that Mormon doctrine describes. The Titanic also had that too. We all know what happened to the third degree. Didn't work out well. What the church does not teach is that you get do-overs. There is no reincarnation, no coming back as a different person to try again. LDS doctrine is very clear on this. It is appointed unto men once to die, and after this, the judgment. One life, one test, one shot. That's their official rule book. But Chad took a very different approach. He claimed that the highest, most exalted souls, those closest to godhood, weren't bound by this, you know, one and done system. Instead, he said they were sent back again and again, living multiple mortal lives as they climb towards perfection. According to Chad, those who had achieved enough spiritual progression would continue to return in new bodies to help prepare the world for Christ's return. He believed that he and Lori had done this many times. Chad and Lori, in their past lives, they had been great spiritual leaders. He said that they had been together in previous incarnations, that their connection was eternal, and that their mission in this life was just the latest chapter in a story had that been unfolding for centuries. And it had also been accounted for in many romance novels that used to line countless grocery store checkout aisles. Kind of. He didn't quite say that. But he did text Lori a very, very, very long story message that was kind of like that in a really creepy, weird way. You can listen to that here on the podcast channel as well, or on YouTube, a whole reading of their weird love letter back and forth. Oh, trust me, it's something. And Lori, already primed to believe she was special, didn't just accept this. She took it to the next level, because if Chad had been a prophet in past lives, who had she been? Lori didn't want to think of herself as just another woman, just another follower. She was too good for that. If she was part of Chad's divine mission, she had to become important. And so she started telling people that in her past lives, she had been a biblical figure, a goddess, exactly. The wife of a great spiritual leader. She believed she had been connected to the most powerful men in history. Because, of course, she had, you know? It wasn't enough to be special in this life. She needed to have always been special. This belief system wasn't just about who they had been. It was also about who they were now. Because in Chad's theology, each person on earth had a spiritual ranking based on how many lives they had lived and how much they had progressed. His own little, you know, Casey's countdown. Some people were highly advanced souls, while others were newer, lower beings, you know, bouncing off the countdown this week. And of course, Chad and Lori were at the very top, always. They're very close followers, those who accepted their teachings, who were also considered spiritually high-ranking. But anyone who doubted them, anyone who pushed back against their beliefs, those people were the less evolved. They were the dark spirits. They were not meant to continue into the next phase of existence. And that's where the beliefs became dangerous, because if you start seeing people as not as equals, but as souls of varying worth, then you start making judgments about who deserves to stay and who doesn't. And if someone's soul was too far gone, well, according to Chad and Lori, there was only one solution to that. This entire belief system didn't come out of nowhere. It wasn't something Chad just invented from scratch. It actually had roots, deep, old, obscure roots in the fringes of LDS history. Yes, someone else had already thought this up first. He wasn't that original. The idea of multiple mortal probations had surfaced before, but never in mainstream doctrine. It was a concept that had floated around in early Mormon fundamentalist circles, whispered about by splinter groups and self-described prophets who claim to have special knowledge that the church refused to acknowledge. And if you just come sleep with your leader, you'll have that divine knowledge. Yes, that's part of a lot of FLDS faiths where I have the knowledge. You just come here, you know, we get it on. Doesn't matter what your age is. And then I'm going to tell you all of the secrets. And by the way, you have to wear dresses like it's 1800s, okay? There were even rumors that Joseph Smith himself had privately discussed something similar. A belief that great spiritual leaders could return multiple times. But even if Smith had toyed with the idea, it never made it into the official teachings of the church. Instead, it became something that only existed in the fringes. Theological dread and theological dead end that resurfaced every now and then amongst those looking for something more mystical than the standard LDS doctrine, because it's not mystical enough. Chad found these ideas, latched onto them, and twisted them to fit his own narrative. But unlike the old Mormon fundamentalist, Chad wasn't just talking about himself when he spoke about past lives. He was using the system to categorize everyone around him, to decide what mattered and who didn't. Because when you believe that your soul is the highest level, when you think you've lived dozens of exalted lives, well, those around you are spiritually inferior, the only way to go. It's only a small step to believing that you have the right to judge who stays and who goes. It's exactly what Chad and Lori did. The belief in multiple mortal probations wasn't just a harmless spiritual way or a theory for them. It was a tool, a way to justify what they were about to do. Because if someone was too far behind, too low on the spiritual ladder, then maybe their time on earth had just run out. Chad, Daybell, and Lori Vallow had a system. To them, the world wasn't made up of complex, flawed individual human beings. It was a chessboard, light versus dark, good versus evil, and they were the ones deciding who belonged on which side. If you were light, you're one of God's chosen. If you were righteous, spiritually advanced, that meant you got to play a role in the unfolding apocalypse. If you were dark, you were something else entirely. And once someone was labeled dark, their fate was sealed. This wasn't just a metaphor for good and bad people. It wasn't about morality in any traditional sense. Chad and Lori believed that they had the ability to see beyond the physical world, that they could spiritually diagnose those around them, separating the souls that were worthy from the ones that needed to be dealt with. At first, their system was just a way to rank people. They believed that some souls were more evolved than others, that certain individuals had lived multiple lifetimes and had risen to higher spiritual levels, while others were newer, lower beings and were still figuring things out. But the real turning point came when they introduced the concept of possession. According to Chad and Lori, a person could start out as light. They could be someone they loved, someone that they had actually trusted. But if their spiritual ranking dropped too low, if they became too dark, well, something would happen. A demon would take over, or in their words, the person would become a zombie. Yes, you know, you start thinking about like Michael Jackson and Thriller or The Walking Dead. You don't want to be that. That seems kind of spooky. That seems kind of scary. And to understand just how horrifying that belief really was, you have to understand that what they meant when they said zombie, they weren't just talking about the undead brain-eating corpses. No, Chad and Lori's zombies, they were living people. Peoples whose original souls, follow along, people whose original souls had supposedly been forced out of their bodies, replaced by an evil entity. This idea didn't come from the LDS church. It wasn't part of mainstream Mormon belief, but their warped theology. Once a person was possessed by a dark spirit, they were no longer themselves. Their true soul was trapped somewhere else, waiting to be freed. And how did you free someone from a zombie state? Simple. You destroyed their body. Easy enough. It's easy to see why this belief was so dangerous. Chad and Lori had effectively given themselves permissions to kill, with a built-in spiritual excuse. If someone was a zombie, then they weren't really alive anymore. Not in the way that mattered anyway. And if you believe that, once you convince yourself that certain people aren't actually people anymore, it becomes chillingly easy to justify getting rid of them. Zombie doctrine didn't appear overnight. It started subtly, almost harmlessly, Laurie would talk about how certain people had low vibrations, how some souls were more righteous than others. Chad expanded on it, adding in the idea that some people were so dark that their spirits could be ejected from their bodies altogether. At first, it was just talk. You know, like you do over dinner. You know, I think Bill's spirit has been ejected from his body. Oh, honey, really? I could see that. Could you pass the Brussels sprouts? Aren't those good? Air fried them. So it goes from talk. And then it just wasn't. When Charles Vallow, Lori's fourth husband, started questioning her beliefs, she told people that he had already been replaced. He was no longer Charles. The real Charles was gone. His body now just a shell being used by a dark entity. And they gave them names. And this is where it gets real fun. Nick Schneider apparently took over his body. That's the name of the dark entity. Nick Schneider. I know. She said it like it was a fact. Like it was just something that happened. And once Charles was labeled Nick Schneider or a zombie, it wasn't long before he was dead. When Lori's own children, Tylee and JJ, became obstacles to her new life with Chad, the same logic applied. They were zombies too. And once that label was attached, their fate was pretty much sealed. Her own kids. Chad and Lori weren't the first people in history to create a belief system that allowed them to dehumanize others, but what made their version so insidious was that it didn't look like violence at first. It started with whispers, with labels, with seemingly harmless talk about spiritual rankings. But step by step, it turned into something far worse. Because when you look at someone you love and tell yourself they're not really there anymore, that their body is just an empty vessel, a shell that needs to be discarded, there is nothing you won't justify. And Chad and Lori justified everything. Lori Vallow didn't think she could die. Not in the way that normal people do. Not in car crashes, not from disease, not even if someone tried to kill her. She was above all of that. She told people she had been translated, a spiritual concept that in mainstream Mormonism refers to rare individuals who are taken into a higher state without experiencing death. In LDS scripture, there are figures like Enoch and the three Nephites who were said to have been lifted from mortality into a state where they didn't age, didn't suffer, and could live on indefinitely until the divine mission was complete. And then Burt Reynolds died. Making that part up. But here's the thing. The LDS Church teaches that translation is incredibly rare, something reserved for God's purposes, not something that just happens because a person decides they're special. Yet Lori fully believed she had reached that state. She told people she no longer needed food or sleep. If only she stuck with that one longer, that her body had become invincible. She claimed that because she was one of God's chosen, the rules of life and death don't apply to her. And Chad, well, he backed it up because he had a portal. According to Chad, there was a specific spot in his home. Yes, in his home where he could open a direct line to heaven. You know, in the pantry. Right underneath the Kraft mac and cheese, right there in that little corner where there's a lot of potato chips. You move the chips back. You got to get some of the mac and cheese out. But right there in that corner, that's the portal. Who knows? He described it as a spiritual access point, a place where he could step between the physical world and the divine. He used this portal, he said, to communicate with angels, spirits, and even higher beings. And through it, he received revelations, messages from beyond that guided everything he and Lori did. Then he realized it was just a fax machine and he hadn't ever seen one before. Okay, no, that's not true either. Together, they created an entire spiritual framework around their supposed abilities. They weren't just receiving divine guidance, they were actively manipulating spiritual forces. Lori began practicing energy work, something that balanced New Age mysticism with her version of LDS theology, you know, a good remix there. Fusion religion, if you will. She talked about vibrational frequencies, claiming that people with high vibrations were spiritually pure, while those with low vibrations were dark entities. And she believed that she could sense these vibrations and even adjust them. Yeah, she could fix you through prayer and ritual. Chad, meanwhile, focused on ranking people's spiritual levels. Chad's a numbers guy. He's not that bright. You can do like 1 to 10, and that's about it. Assessing scores based on how close they were to godhood. Yes, assigning people their rankings. Chad had that ability. He saw himself and Lori as at the top of this divine hierarchy, already operating on a higher plane of existence than normal humans. And once they believed that, everything changed. Because if you truly think you're a divine being, the rules of normal life do not apply to you anymore. Laws don't apply. Morality doesn't apply. If Lori was an immoral, godlike figure, then she didn't have to answer to earthly authorities either. If Chad was receiving direct instructions from higher realms, then no one else's opinion mattered. They weren't just special anymore. They were above everyone and everything. And once they believed that, nothing, not family, not love, not even human life was more important than their own mission. There's more to come in the Chad and Lori Daybell WTF story, as we continue to dive deep into their belief system and try to wrap our minds around just what the hell was going on in their minds as these tragedies unfolded. If you want more, be sure to press subscribe wherever you are downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of that. If you're watching us on YouTube, hit the subscribe button, hit the bell there. Please comment. Let us know what you think about what was going on with Chad and Lori Daybell. We got a lot more to come. Hit subscribe and stay close.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. She was the perfect wife, always smiling, always supportive. A pillar of the community, beloved by friends, adored by family, and secretly researching undetectable poisons in her spare time. Maybe it was the way he chewed. Maybe she just got bored. Or maybe, just maybe, she had been planning this since the honeymoon. But if he had just paid attention, if he had just known what to look for, if he had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and learned the red flags, he could have heard every episode of Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Ad-free, and before everyone else, he could have seen it coming. Instead, he's 6 feet under, and she's shopping for husband number two. Don't be like him. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.